I'm using. Here we go. It says we're live, Tammy. We're live. Hello, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to the Epic Engagement Adventure. Today, we had an adventure with technology right before y'all came to see us. So, welcome. So glad to have you. Today, I am interviewing Miss Tammy Gross, a scriptpreneur. Oh, we'll get into that. And she's amazing. I met her on a networking event a while back. And what she does with people's stories is nothing short of amazing. And she's also an engaging human being. So obviously, I invited her here. Tammy, how are you?
I am doing wonderful. I am really happy to be here. We had a really great discussion where I got to know more about you, and that was so cool. You came on my podcast, and then also, you know, just engaging after that particular event, you were so impressive. So kudos to you for everything that you do, because you make things very fun, but you also make them really simple and succinct and actionable, which is really cool.
All right, I'm gonna snip at that whole part and have them use it as a testimonial, because that was amazing. But we are here to find out more about you, my friend. So tell everybody what a scriptpreneur is.
It's a very well-known old term that's been used. No, actually, I made it up like about a year ago.
Yeah. So there you go. All right. But why can't you?
Exactly. But you know what? It's pretty apt, because, you know, there was a point where after I started writing screenplays, and we can go back further if you want at some point, but before I started writing screenplays, I was already kind of an entry. I was totally an entrepreneur. I had already hung my shingle as a musician. And in 2000, I used the internet, I was kind of being told to. I was having my arm twisted by all these people who wanted me to do these arrangements for them. They were very special kind of arrangements that I had always been doing when I was like a music director at different churches and in different community organizations. And just as a musician, there's like this thing called studio charts. And so I had so many people coming to me when there was a certain thing that happened. Well, my dad died in 1996. And so I had like a 4-year, like what's going on kind of time in my life. And in 1999 or so, Everybody was coming at me, because like I had kind of taken a break from some of this stuff. And they're like, you know, we need this. Because at churches especially, people were always learning a new song. And these were contemporary churches, very contemporary, doing songs off the top 40. Off the radio and that kind of thing, or old songs and stuff, where there might be some sheet music that exists, but in many cases it was new music that we've only just started hearing on the radio that just worked really well with the theme of whatever. And they had to learn a new song or two or more every week with volunteer musicians. Some of them might've been pros, but a lot of them might've been the person who just learned how to play, you know, the three basic chords last week. And there's these specials, these special music charts that you can do. They're called studio charts, where it's, you know, they're designed so that, for one thing, the bass player doesn't have to keep turning the page for sheet music that's 6 pages or 12 pages long or something, you know. And it's also, and it just works for all musicians, and it helps everybody be elevated and shine. And I loved being the person who could help other people shine. You know, I did vocal coaching. I did a lot of things when I was a musician. And so that was something that I just kind of had to like, okay, I'm going to have to do this online, because now I've moved out of state from where I used to be, and all these other people have moved into other states, and we were just all over the world, and they were coming to me asking me to do this. And so I made it a business and did that since 2000. And in fact, I think I'm having my anniversary, I just realized, in 2 days, because I think it was yesterday. Yesterday was my anniversary. It was March 1st.
Happy anniversary.
March 5th is a different anniversary that's kind of connected. But anyhow, so March 1st of 2000 is when I actually opened the doors for that. And so that is something that I just did for a really long time. But back when I was young, and I'm getting to the answer, by the way.
I was young, it's coming.
I was in a musician family. We were it was an entertainment family. I was on the road with my dad. He was on television. He did all these different things all across the country. We traveled everywhere. And it turned out that I had some of his talent. Okay, I had all of his talent basically, but not quite as good. He was like the best. But I was a carbon copy of him, it turned out. So we knew at some point, like by the time I was 13, I performed, and everybody's like, in my family was like, oh, she really can sing, because they had tuned me out at home. You know, I was playing on the piano and singing loud and everything, but I was in front of an audience, and it suddenly dawned on them, she has talent. So we kind of sat down as a family, and I'm like, but I love to write. I love writing, and I'm so good with, you know, I do the, you know, I'm really good at the spelling and the punctuation and all those things. But I just love to write, and I love stories and everything. And so we kind of came up with a life plan for me that was, it's like, who does this? But we kind of did. And basically that I would sing while I'm young, and then I would write when I'm old, and I have like a life experience. And so in about 2008, apparently I turned old. That's when I started writing. Yeah. So I started writing because I came across a story, a true story. I don't want to go too deep in those woods, because I want to get to at least the answer of the first question that you asked. And that is basically, I started writing screenplays, and I'll fast forward and I can go backward if I need to. And at some point I realized I am still a facilitator. And I was actually still doing my music at that time too, at least online. I wasn't singing as much. I wasn't doing as much performing, but I was still helping other people. And I saw myself as somebody who loves to help other people shine and be a facilitator. And of course, my love for like editing and stuff is something that always seeped into every job I've ever had, whether it was in music or like administrative or anything. There was always like a newsletter or something that I had to edit for somebody somewhere. And it was always part of my job description. And I had edited books at that point. And when I started to realize the same thing was happening, I was getting my arm twisted after starting a writing group. Everybody's asking me, okay, so you understand the format. So how do I do this? And will you edit this? And will you help me with this? And all that was coming at me to the point where it's like, okay, another shingle's going up. And so I started an editing thing. So I was starting to help people edit their screenplays. And that kind of brought me along. And somewhere like in the last couple of years or so, I realized, okay, I need to help more people and do better and like start coaching them more the way I used to with vocals and stuff like that, and make it more, you know, scalable for me, but also just so that I'm helping more people. And so that's when I realized I'm a scriptpreneur, because I'm a creative who has found out that to be not successful, so, you know, everybody has their own definition, but for musicians, our definition doesn't always involve money. we're starving artists by nature for some reason, but that's the problem, right? And so that's why I became the scriptpreneur, is because I also had to remind myself, hey, this is an entrepreneurial thing. You have to make money if you want to have an impact, money and impact, you know? So that's where it kind of came born from, is just, I'm a facilitator to help others, but I also have to help myself. And I want other creatives to feel that it doesn't have to be at the expense of your livelihood, can be your creativity. But you have to think like an entrepreneur. If you're going to be a musician, if you're going to be an artist, there are things you have to kind of like realize, okay, this might not be my strong suit, but I've still got to make it a priority. That's a long answer to a very short, simple question.
Oh, I love those. I mean, it gives you so much context, right? It gives us context because, you know, and stories just often do that.
Yeah.
Stories are the best at doing that. So you take people's stories now, and you do some fabulous things with them. So kind of talk a little bit about that if you could.
Well, you know, like with my own stories, you know, I was trying to figure it out. And there was that moment. There was like a series of moments, but they all kind of happened around the same time where I had that aha. It's like, oh, I get story structure. Oh, because that's such a killer right there. And like how to break story. It's still probably my biggest struggle is how to break a story when I'm trying to create something. And that's why probably I'm drawn toward real stories, because it's like all the material's there. Now I just have to, you know, fix it, and get it structured. And so that's one thing that attracts me to real, to true stories. But that's something that I had to figure out for myself, but then also format. I'm talking about screenwriting for myself, at least. And I've also written books, so it's not just screenwriting. But it often can be both, can be writing a book and writing a screenplay and making them work together. But that's probably the toughest thing that people think is easy after they think they get it. And then they find out, I don't really get it yet, you know, because now I keep finding myself asking, how do you do this? And how do you do that? And it's really quite simple, but it takes time to really let it sink in. When it finally sunk in for me and it all clicked, I went on this retreat because one of the other things is also like, how do I just write faster? How do I make myself stop being an editor? How do I stop editing myself when I'm writing? And I went on this retreat that was 48 hours and write your script in 48 hours. There was some guidance from some pros that I had met through some networking over the years at that point. And as everything else was clicking, then I was able to actually do that. So in 48 hours, I wrote a script. And it was probably my best script to date in that it was simple and yet it had complexity to it. You know, there's a twist ending that nobody sees coming and that kind of thing. And it was kind of inspired by a true story, not totally based on one. And I was able to not only complete it, but I cleaned it up a little bit because it was a little, you know, that's the secret to writing fast is you just let yourself write it and just let it be junk, let it be crap and everything. But in this case, I was getting all the other things in a row and it's like, it came out pretty good. And I just had to clean it up a little, entered it in a few contests, won grand prize in the very first contest, won several other prizes. I can't remember what the number is, but somewhere in the, like a dozen, all in 1 year that it won all these different, awards and everything. And it's been optioned actually a couple of times. And now it's under option right now with the producer of Bones. And he's also the producer of Queen of the South and this new thing that came out on Apple called Shantaram. He's one of the producers on that. So he believes in the story. He loves ghost stories. This is so not me. I don't tell ghost stories, but this is a ghost story because it's based on a true story where a girl thought she was speaking to a ghost, and I've wanted to explore that psychologically. And so that's what it's about. And so it's in pre-production right now. It's supposed to get out to the world in the next year or so. Hopefully it really will. You never know. An option is where somebody like a producer will pay you money for your script, and they keep they're the only ones with the option to turn it into a movie. And so they pay for like a certain amount of time to have that. And he had a tragedy that happened last year. So he actually renewed it for this year because he lost his stepson on a tragic accident last year. So that kind of derailed him on a lot of projects and stuff. So that's why he's doing it now. But that's why options are really cool, because then if he doesn't end up making it, I have it back and I can get it to somebody else. It's already been optioned by a couple other people who are still kind of interested in it. So you never know. And at the same time that I did that, I also turned it into a book. And in a month, I did this very publicly. I did it on Facebook. I actually turned it into a bestseller. And I walked everybody through the steps that I was taking to do it. And it was really cool. I wanted to get it to number one, but I got it to number two. So that was good. Okay. I didn't know what I was doing. I was learning it as I went at that time. So another long answer. I don't even know if I answered the question, to be honest.
You know, I don't remember the question, so we're good. Well, and that's a fascinating process too. I'm in the middle of the sticks and the corn stalks in Omaha.
Right.
I have no idea what happens in Hollywood. Yeah. Well, I did watch the making of The Godfather, that Amazon Prime series. That was a lot of fun, and that I learned really a little tiny bit.
Yeah, The Offer. That was great. Yeah.
So, you know, how some of those things work, how a story becomes something that Hollywood would be interested in. Most people, I think, probably have no idea.
Yeah. And that's the thing is that even the people who, you know, William Goldman is the guy who wrote, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid and Marathon Man, and what else do you? Oh, well, and of course, Princess Bride, like my favorite movie
Princess
ever.
Bride!
Princess Bride, and the book. The book is amazing. But anyhow, and he's from my hometown. He actually graduated from the same high school as me. And so anyhow, he's famous for saying that nobody knows anything. And that's the truth. When it comes to everything Hollywood, nobody knows anything. But we've now been around long enough that I actually have kind of figured out at least some steps that you can take to kind of, you know, make things happen. And you know, you learn things from like The Offer, the series that you were just talking about, The Making of the Godfather. And there, it's like everybody's path is going to be different, but there are certain things that do happen. And so, yeah, it's a big breakdown to try to figure it out. But it's something that I've been working on because it's like, I want people to succeed. That's what I'm all about. I want to help other people succeed. I want to help myself succeed, but I want others to succeed even more than I want myself to, because that's what I love. I love seeing other people shine. And that's my thing.
How do you know when, you know, you're listening to someone else's story, or when you're considering a story, how do you know, hey, this is this might be script worthy?
You know, there's an empathy that I think some of the best producers and the best predictors, I guess you could say, of success. You know, you've got Jerry Bruckheimer, you have J.J. Abrams. These are names that it's like when they're attached to a project, you know, it's going to be good. And even if it's not like a genre that you care about, and they just, you know, obviously they have experience that's behind that. But there's also, you know, you have to have like an empathy to other people's voices and to other people's opinions. If you're stuck in a rut with like, I only watch horror movies, I only want to be scared, you know, or I only watch, you know, art house movies and I just want to have the intellectual, you know, stimulation or whatever. You know, if you can just like step back and listen to a story for the fact that it's a story and that it's a good story that can bring you on a roller coaster of emotions and bring you to an outcome that's like you're satisfied at the end. You might not be happy. It might be a sad ending, or it might be a horrible ending, or it might be a loose ending. But if it kind of satisfies you, because like, okay, yeah, I don't really want to know what happens next. I want to feel like that those people keep going on to have more adventures or something, you know, that's just an instinct. But I don't think instinct is always just what you're born with. It is an empathy that you can, you know, hone and everything. So when you hear somebody else's story, or when you're trying to figure out if your story is good, you just have to look at it from a lot of different perspectives. You know, don't forget that your grandmother's going to want to see this, but so is your next door neighbor who you don't get along with, and they have money, so you want them to pay for it, right? And you want them to want to see it and tell all their friends about it, even though it's like, I have this horrible neighbor, but she has a really good movie. you know or book or whatever it is. And so yeah, there's an empathy that has to be kind of nurtured, I guess, that we all really have. We just have to make sure that we tap into it, because a lot of people, it's very hard to let go of what I think is good. And then if you don't agree, then you just have no taste. And it's like, no, that's not how it works. It's more about, is it a story that will bring people along? And that's a really big thing. And I can't say that I fully have that. Nobody does. But I think J.J. Abrams and Bruckheimer have it pretty good.
Right. Some of the biggies. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
God, I, you know, no shade about the Star Trek and the Star Wars, but I really loved J.J. Abrams when he was doing Lost. One.
Yeah, I loved him, and then I hated him. Then I hated him because he ruined the ending, right? You know, it's like, okay, that is not the kind, that's not satisfying at all.
everybody, Lost is my favorite show, and we will now be podcasting for 6 hours. I hope you have the comfortable shoes on. That ending, it was
forever.
It wasn't satisfactory to a whole lot of people. And what I came to know later was, I wonder if they could have come up with something.
Oh, they could. They could have. I think they just got themselves lost. I think the title says it all. They literally got lost, because it was one of those things where, you know, they were actually operating on William Goldman's, you know, his theory of that nobody knows anything. And
yeah,
so that is where they started, because they probably, you know, a lot of those people who were behind that, it's like they've done a zillion things and they've been throwing spaghetti at the wall for years. And this was a spaghetti project, I feel like, that Lost was. So yes, you're right. We could do, actually, I could talk about it quite a bit too, that it is something where they just threw something and it's like, ooh, that sticks really good. And that is really cool. And there are so many things. Let's think of these cool things. But they just, you know, I don't know if, you know, I don't know the ins. I don't know. I haven't heard any interviews even about it. But all I can imagine is what happened, knowing enough about the business. Not that I'm the end all with the biz. But I think that is what happened, is that they started knowing that they had a cool concept, but they didn't have that end in mind, because they didn't have to. They were all established enough that they didn't really have to show, hey, we got this really cool ending. It's like, oh, just trust us, we got it. And then there's like, oh man, we kind of don't. You know? And also, it's been more seasons than we were expecting. We didn't expect it to go past season one or two. You know, so I think they just got themselves a little lost, and that happens for a lot of people. And that is actually, that has been a cautionary tale. There's, you'll notice that there aren't too many. In fact, I can't really think of any. I'm sure there are. I can't think of any series since 2004 or 2005 where that's been. Well, maybe 2006. I think that's when it ended, somewhere around there. But anyhow, I don't think there have been
too many. It ended in 10.
Oh, it went that many seasons? I couldn't remember. I know I've seen them all.
Yes.
So yeah. So since then, you just have not seen, and even during that, you've not seen things go where it's like, huh? You've seen things where they canceled it before they could get you to the ending, but they had an ending. Yeah. They had all those years to bring you to that satisfying ending. And they just kind of copped out because it's like, just didn't have it. And that was a cautionary tale that changed how things work. You just don't see that anymore. Now you get full Bibles from people. That is called a series Bible. When you come up with a concept for a series, and it can change, of course, but usually you'll see that there's a lot of really cool twists to a lot of things nowadays, because they take it all the way from the inception all the way to where it needs to end up, which might be in a totally weird, different place where you never see it coming, which those are the best, but it's there from the beginning and everything feeds into that. Lost didn't feed into one specific place. It just kept going. And that's
it did.
When you're writing your own story, that's something to keep in mind, is, you know, in fact, that's the first thing I always tell people, is have your end game in mind. And yes, I have to keep moving from the sun because we didn't make sure that we had the, I didn't realize it. It's 5 o'clock hour here. I'm in Orlando. Oh, actually, I'm in Cape Canaveral right now at my mom's house. But yeah, the sun is playing its little tricks on me. But yeah, so that's one of the things that you have to have, is you have to think of your own ending and what your end goal is. Not so much what the end of your story is, but what do you want your story to leave people with? So if you're telling your own story, and that's one of the things that I love, I alluded to a little bit, but I love it when people tell their own story, true stories. They really resound with me for lots of reasons, not just because it's easier to break the story for me personally, but also because I only had a couple of clients over all these years since 2010 when I hung that shingle. And I only had a couple of people give me their own personal story. For one thing, most people weren't doing that because I was getting a lot of, you know, newbies or people who weren't really super known. They were pros, but they weren't super known. Then I had an A-lister come to me. Shia LaBeouf brought me this script with a terrible name that even if I can remember it, I won't. It's almost a naughty word, but it's not, but it was really weird. I'm so glad I can't think of it. Anyhow, other than the title of it, it was like a really good story, but it was like two stories and it was kind of a mess a little bit, but he knew what he was doing because Shia LaBeouf, can't almost say his name. And it was his own original origin story of when he was a kid actor. He was doing like Disney stuff and he was doing some other stuff. And the weird circumstances of living in a hotel or a motel with his father while his mother was out doing other things. And then his story actually had his mother's story, like the second half. And I don't know how much you know, or if you even know who Shia LaBeouf is, but he's had a lot of problems in that have been very public, where like he was arrested once and he had stuff happen. And this is about the time that he sent it to me. And so I even mentioned to him, you know, you could use some, you know, if you're trying to be, you know, he seemed to be very deep in how he was thinking about things. So I was able to say, you know, think about the things that are happening now and how you can incorporate that and just tell the main story, which is you and your dad. I love the story with your mom, but it kind of rambles and you don't seem to have closure on some of those things. So you need to do something with the dad thing. And that's exactly what he ended up doing. And he came up with the movie Honey Boy in the end, where he played his own dad. Really amazing, amazing movie if you haven't seen it, Honey Boy. And then another A-lister came to me and it was his origin story. He's the guy who does all the action sequences for the biggest, you know, franchises out there. Fast and Furious, Transformers, Kong Skull Island, some of the Marvel things and everything. And he does all the action stuff. He's the second unit director. And he brought his origin story of how he became a stuntman, which is usually how people become second unit directors, their first stuntmen and stunt directors and coordinators. And it was a great story. And so when I got those, I'm like, this is what I love to help people tell their true story, because it also shows how they're making a big difference in the world now. And it's inspiring to all of us when it's a true story. And people who are out there who are doing things like what you're doing, and you're helping people to better get to the world with their products or with their services or with their coaching, whatever it is that they're doing. And the coaches and the speakers who are out there who have their own things that they're trying to get out there. There's a reason you're doing that. You know, I happen to know what yours is because I've heard your story and it's amazing. Yours is very screen worthy. It's cinematic. It's a great story. You know, it's got highs and lows. It's got it all. And it's very interesting. And some people might wonder if theirs is interesting, but it's like, if this story kind of gives the foundation of why you're helping other people now, then it's worthy to tell. I don't want to blast you with too many words, but I'll just give you this thought right now that kind of hopefully is relevant to everything you want to hear, is that the way I look at story structure and the way that you can really simplify it, because I'm always about simplifying, because that's why I was in my head and it took me a few years to have everything click, is because there was just so much noise and so many ideas of what works and what doesn't. It's like simplify, simplify, simplify. The simplest way to tell a story is obviously just, you know, beginning, middle, end, right? But if you're a person who's out there and who's doing things to help other people and you want to tell your origin story, just even from the stage, and you want to tell it in 30 seconds, let alone in 30 minutes or in a whole movie or in a whole series, whatever it is, think of it as a beginning and an end. You've got a problem that you start out with, and then you have the solution that you're trying to get to. However, and you've heard me say some of this, before you can get there, there's usually like this huge mountain that's kind of in the way. And so I'm picturing a W. If you can picture the W with me, you know, we got the. So you start out with this problem to get to the solution, but there's that mountain you have to crawl up and down, and you fall off of, and you fall into crevices and the caves, and, you know, all the things that happen on a mountain that are just horrible. And that's that mountain that you had to move out of your own way to get to that solution. And what you're doing in the world now is you're helping people go from problem to solution, and you're moving that mountain. You're a mountain mover. You're a mountain mover if you are helping people to do what you did for yourself. I love it when people are doing that kind of work in the world. Not everybody's doing that, but it's usually kind of a motivator and a starter that you moved some big mountain out of your life. And you want to help other people move that mountain out of their life. And you have the means because you got there. You got that solution. You know, a lot of people just kind of fall on the mountain and just kind of get stuck there. You know, Everest has a lot of dead bodies. You know, and that's, you are true. Not one of those dead bodies if you did that. So, you know, you probably left your body in some other mountain, you know, with some other thing where you didn't keep going because you had to do this one. This was your mountain that you needed to do, and you can help others with it. That simplifies.
Well, so many, you know, so many of my fellow coaches, that's their story too.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and there's kind of a thing in the industry where, you know, you got to write a book, you got to write a book, you got to write a book. And that's absolutely true. A book to establish expertise. Yes. Yes. Yep. That is a good path. Yeah. But for me, it's also got to include the origin story. You know, it's also because if I'm a secret superhero, and
your persona is totally, you know, it comes out of everything that you went through. It comes out of who you are, everything you went through, and why you're doing what you're doing now, and how you are, and how people are perceiving you as well, you know? So, yeah. And I agree. And actually that's a great point, is that I do think that people who are helping other people, I think that book is really important, but it's not going to serve people as well if you can't just open up a little bit, be a little vulnerable, but also be triumphant about it, that you went through something hard, but you came out of it and you got to that solution. And that's why you're there. That's why you're helping people, you know? So include that in your book. You can do it. You can do it throughout the whole book. You can pepper it in, like start each chapter with it and then get into whatever the lesson is or the tactic is, or, you know, whatever the book is trying to solve for people. Or you can just make it like the opening and make it your preface, that it's like, here's my story and here's why I do this, and then get into it. You know, you can do it any way you want. There's no rules. I love it when there's no rules. There's no rules at all.
Can it be sort of a graphic novel type of thing with, you know,
that's one of the things I love, is that you have a graphic novel story and that's how you want to tell it. And look at what happens to graphic novels these days, right? We got Marvel and we've got DC, and they're all over the place, and some that are like independent and everything, and they're making it as movies. And I love that. So when you're doing that, even if you never see yourself making a movie and you don't even have that aspiration, your story, it has to play in the mind of the reader as a movie. And so I think everybody needs to write kind of like they're writing a screenplay, and bring us along your story. Get us in the inner thoughts. Let us hear a little dialogue. A lot of people forget that dialogue is part of life, that we talk, that we're saying words to each other. We're not just having the emotions. We're also doing things and we're speaking things. And you don't have to go crazy with that. But that's one of those things that I think a lot of people who want to tell their story, they just want to kind of sum it up. And I mean, even when just earlier when I was saying it, I don't think I actually said like what my family said to me. And that's a better way to tell the story probably, is like my family sat me down and said, you need to blah, blah. You know, I could, you know, do it that way. And probably if I ever write it myself, because I'm writing other people's, I haven't done that yet. You know, it's going to have the dialogue, right? And it's how we have the human connection. So I think everybody who's listening probably can do exactly that.
Well, and I absolutely recommend, you've got a little gift for the audience. I'm going to put this in the chat, so that everybody can get this. Yes. Because it's important. Let's see. Okay. There's the live chat. New technology, everybody. Very good.
Yes. And that is actually, that speaks to what I had talked about, that there are steps you can take. You don't have to follow this like a map, like I have to do this now. Oh, I can't do that yet because it's down there. No, just, you know, do them all. Just try not to do them all at once. If you kind of take them one at a time, maybe you can do it a little out of order. But really, pretty much, if you want to get your story out there, you're going to have to talk about it. So you're going to have to speak about it. So all the steps that are in there are ways to get your story out to the world, with or without. You don't have to go all the way to Hollywood, but if you're thinking that way, your story is going to resound a lot better.
Well, and you know, there's so many ways to tell a story. I'm an ex-theater kid. I'm a theater kid forever, whatever.
I was gonna say, you kind of still are. And, every day, right now. Yeah. You're in costume right now. You're in your own costume, but still.
Yeah, it's, there's so many beautiful ways to tell a story. Well, I can't wait to get into that with you, obviously. But I do want to ask a question that I ask every episode. Sure. Coaches come and listen to this podcast to get different ideas of how to engage their audience.
Right.
So using all of your vast experience of storytelling and with audience and everything else, how do you engage your audience, Tammy?
I think the best way to engage for me has been, and I'm still learning, trust me, I'm still learning, I'm still struggling with certain things, is just be yourself wherever you are in front of them. I'm trying to be myself right now. I'm not trying to put on any airs or anything like that. And so that's a big thing. But when it comes to like tactically, I know for myself, at least, doing a summit was amazing because it brought in other people's audiences. Anytime you can get other people's audiences is such a great way to have new engagement. And it also, especially if you're hosting it, and the one that I did last year, it doubled my audience pretty much overnight. It doubled how many people I could reach. And like I had this audience of screenwriters, and then all of a sudden I had this audience of speakers, and they were all suddenly together. And that was really, really cool. But to engage them, I was the host. So I was the one asking everybody their question, the questions, you know, and let them talk, let them shine, because that's what I love to do. But it was still ultimately my gig, you know, they were on my stage. And so have your own stage and engage anybody who comes to it, you know, whether they're on stage or if they're in the audience, you know, people would ask questions and stuff. It was the one that I did was live. And so people were able to ask us questions like in the chat. We did it through Zoom. We did it through Zoom. Very similar to what we're doing right now, but with that special engagement where people were kind of invited to it. And it was great because I got to know exactly what people really wanted to know from my guest or what they wanted to know from me, because I think I did a couple of keynote type things too. It's another thing that helps your stage. So I'd say that, but while I was there, I was just always trying to be myself. Just that's the biggest way to engage is just open up. And if you're kind of a recluse, which I'm a writer, you know, I'm a scriptpreneur, and yeah. I have to keep reminding myself of the preneur part. I want to go into a dark den and I just want to write. I don't want to have to engage with anybody. I mean, just because I have a bubbly personality doesn't mean I want to use it all the time.
Yeah. Right.
But when I am with people, I want to be with people. I don't want to be distracted and thinking about the business side so much to the point I don't want to forget it, but I don't want to think about it so much that I can't be me. So hopefully that says it all.
That does. I mean, and truly, you know, that last part is so important. It's coming down to really being who you are and wanting to connect with
yes.
people.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's caring curiosity. We use
it
every single day.
I like that.
You use it every single day, and it is about connecting in that way and not in a way that's like, oh, you know, I'm a super important person. Yeah. You know, yeah. like all the stuff that people do. This is yeah, okay. This is why I am a huge fan of you, Tammy Gross. I'm a huge fan. I want to thank you for coming on and sharing with my coaches what's going on. Giving them a new way to think about engaging with their audience. You're the best.
Well, thank you. I know I went over. I don't think you meant for us to go this long, but I talk a lot, so I apologize for that.
No, don't apologize. I don't have an ending time on this thing. You know what okay. I mean? It's like, okay. Hey, it's, you know, I'm not a strict person, if you
No, that doesn't strike me as being you, but yeah, and you're right, and that goes with just, you know, being yourself. But another way to sum it up, maybe, I guess, is, you know, if you're going to show up, you know, don't just be there in body, you know, don't show your face, just be there fully, be fully engaged to engage.
Yeah. Well, and in fact, I'm going to invite you and the whole audience here, to a deal that, my friend Dean Isaacs and I are doing. We have this, ongoing kind of workshop, and it's called Surfing the Tsunami of Change. It's once a month. This, month, I think you might be interested because of what you just said. We're doing How to Read the Zoom.
I love it.
That title is mine.
Wordplay. Oh my gosh, I love wordplay.
It makes me so happy because it makes people do a double take. What is she saying? Did she have how to read the Zoom? Yes. How to read the Zoom. And like, it's really going to be, it's a round table, and it's going to, so come and share your vast experience, please. Yep. And we're just going to go and talk about, you know, what do you do? What do you do with this precious, yeah, rectangle real estate How do you engage people through that? I know it's hard, but just because it's hard doesn't mean you can't do it. Exactly. And since we're, you know, I mean, we're here for the near future. And since we are, you know, how do we reach out? How do we connect over it? So, come Tammy, you would be an awesome voice in that round table. And all of you out there, show up as well. Cause yes. It's going to be a good time. Hang on there. It's going to be a great time. Yeah. Do you have any final words of wisdom for us? Anything concise like a Chinese fortune cookie?
I'd say that my Chinese fortune cookie would be just, you know, there is a story in all of us and your story can change lives. So tell it.
Nice. All right. Well, we have to end with that because it was a mic drop. So everybody within earshot of this message, do that thing. Yep. Do that thing. Tell that story. With that, fans, grasshoppers, I'll be back. Same bot time, same bot channel next week. You can catch us right here doing some epic engagement adventure. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you in a bot.
Awesome.